I then have start having some conscious memory of what happens next. Okay, mm-hmm. Which okay. I've been there obviously for some time, and I'm now in a cafeteria. Okay, it's an empty cafeteria. There's two guys, more in suits, government straight arrows in suits. They walk me down, you know, it's like an open cafeteria. They walk me down, they're getting coffee, right? And then we walk back to a table, and I remember the guy was eating a muffin, and one of them shoved the muffin under my nose, and he said, "Here, you want a bite?" And the other guy said, "Hey, leave him alone." Yeah. And then I'm out again. I'm in a car, different car, sunny out, okay, highway, Pennsylvania, okay. I mean, if you follow the map, if you start from Indiana, yeah, you can see the highways that they took, okay. Pennsylvania, it's a different driver, again, a gray, nondescript, nothing in it car, you know, I mean, like, you know, just empty, clean. Then another bit of weirdness. This is just, which is also, you know, so interesting because, you know, it just seems that operationally in some aspects of this, they were just flying by the seat of their pants, mm-hmm. Okay? Which was, you know, even more, you know, that was scary. Compounded to panic, right? So the thing was, I remember I'm looking at this guy, you know, and now I'm starting to get unwoozy, okay? But, well, I'll get into the state of my mind, okay, because it's really big. As I say, this screwed up my head for 5 years. The thing was that I start coming around, okay? And I look over at this guy, and he really scared me. You know, it was like, you know, like, I mean, I hate using, you know, fiery rhetoric, but this looked like SS, true believer, right? I mean, and...
a train killer.
Yeah, right, you know? And so, you know, it's just like, oh, fuck. He pulls off the highway, okay? And he pulls into this, like sort of hardware gas station, you know, thing. And there's a phone there. And he gets out of the phone booth, and I'm starting to come, and I'm just really thankful that I'm starting to get, so I mean, I can even start moving my hand, and I can see like, ooh, you know, wow, what, what? And so there was a lot of what? I mean, if you don't believe it, believe me, I didn't believe it. Believe me, I didn't believe it, okay? So, I mean, I seriously thought I was losing my mind. Okay, that's, you know, definitely part of the thing, you know, really. So, I mean, you got to understand, at that point, I still didn't believe that the U.S. government would do things to the, you know, like, you know, that they were good guys. They didn't do things to, you know, I'm an American, you know, I mean, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, even if I'm a protester, a hippie, they wouldn't do this, you know, I mean, you know, blah, blah, blah. This guy gets out of the car, he goes to the phone, and I see him, he's talking on the phone. I'm thinking, like, you're asking them what to do with me? You don't know? I got very frightened. I mean, what happens if they come back?
You're
and
able
they,
to overhear what he was
no,
saying?
No, no, I just get the feeling. Right. You know, what is he, you know, I mean, and he comes out, and I just, you know, I got terrorized. Terror is terror. I mean, I was in a state of total terror at this point. And I just sort of figured from the look that I got on this guy that, like, if they say, kill him, you know, boom, you know, and so, which, you know, can get you really annoyed, you know, like having some, you know, being put in that position, once you, you know, get yourself back on your feet. This guy gets in the car, and he takes me out to the highway and dumps me, you know, like a bad movie, you know, boom, on the highway.
Just open the door and kick open
out. Open the door, boom, and I roll over out of the highway, and he's off. Skirting the pebbles back in my face and blah, blah, back on the way. And I'm there. And I was just like, oh, man, right? And I remember the sun, and I remember looking at the green of the glass and just thinking it was all beautiful, and then saying, like, okay, can I stand? Okay, can I stand? Okay. And I struggled to my feet. Okay, that was not easy to do, but I did stand up, okay, which I was really happy about, okay. And I took a deep breath, and then I sort of tried to assess what was happening. And, because I couldn't put it together. This didn't match, you know, or anything, all right. So I said to my, two things came into my mind, just two real clear instructive survival mechanisms, okay? Don't tell anyone, okay? Because if you go and tell somebody what just happened, okay, they're going to lock you up in a loony bin. You ain't ever coming out, okay? Right. So find out what happened. See, you know, you can walk, get your head together, you know, because I started trying to think. It was impossible. And let me just say the second thing, and then I'll try and explain the headspace, okay? The second thing that came into my mind, which was very good information for my mind to tell me, you know, don't tell anybody. I mean, keep your mouth shut, because that's what it would have happened. I mean, mm-hmm. This is crazy business, especially, you know, that I mean, this was before, but pre-Watergate, okay, you know? So, the other thing was, get back to New York, okay? I knew I was close to Philadelphia because I saw the highway sign. You know, get back to New York, get back to the village, get back to the Lower East Side, get below 14th Street in Alphabet City, and see your friends, okay? And get yourself together, okay? Okay. So that's what I was doing. Okay, now, aside from total weakness, okay, because, I mean, I was really as weak as a kitten, I was standing up, and I just had my hand, you know, sort of half hung out, right, which, it wasn't this, the mind that I had for the next 5 years, okay. Abstract painting, that's the only way that I can describe it is two ways. It's sort of abstract painting where a platform doesn't have an end and then it ends, and it goes into another geometric shape that just nothing, everything was sort of liquid, okay? And the only way that I can describe it further is like it was sort of like there was a logical thinking process, okay, that the plot line would drop out of, okay, and would just be bump. It would be like being in a bumpy elevator, okay, that didn't stop for about 5 years, okay. It was like, you know, so the logical connections, you know, it was just the ability to think, you know, which, I mean, it's perfect, you know, I mean, as a counter-interventionist technique, I mean, if you want to jail or knock off or put the people who are opposing your power structure and you want to, you know, like put them out of commission for a while, boy, whatever drug they gave me, boy, that would do it. So I mean, I guess they learned something, but anyway, I'm glad they learned something, but anyway, so the thing was the only other way that I could describe it, because I'll continue with getting off the highway, because there's a bit more that's a bit interesting about that, was to describe the unhappiness and the anguish that this was I was living in the street at the time. I mean, the shape that I was in is some guy that you pass on a corner and is dirty and bedraggled and his clothes are just yuck. And he's mumbling to himself, and he's like, you know, he's out of his mind. That was me. Okay? So, you know, don't tell anybody. It made sense. I mean, because, you know, I mean, I was out of my mind. But part of me was very solid. I was trying to get, you know, I was trying to repatch all of this stuff that kept on falling apart, right?
Namely,
so
the reality
my mind,
around
me. Yeah, right, right, or my mind's perception of the reality
right.
around me. Yeah. So so anyway, there was one night because I was wandering the streets, I was barefoot, and I had eaten some food out of a garbage can, and I found myself rubbing my hands against the brick wall of a bank until they were bleeding and causing me pain, and that's when I knew to stop because my palms were starting to bleed. And I was saying, here, take my blood, but give me back my mind. Okay. Anyway.
So it just must have been a horrifying experience because at that point you really didn't know what was done to you, whether
no.
it was just even just the drugs or something right, else, or what
I,
combination
I,
of drugs
no,
and where
didn't
it was
have
going,
a handle on nothing.
And it didn't seem to end.
No, no. And all my friends left me, you know, and I mean, there was no support mechanism because I had been a very solid person. I mean, I was a person that people looked forward to talking to and gathering around, right? And, you know, I could see them talking, like, what happened to him? You know? And then finally, people became disgusted with me. So, you know, I just, you know, it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just to get a frame of reference here, what year was this that this happened?
Oh, okay. This was the late 60s, let's say around 69, okay?
Summer of 69.
Yeah, because I came to Canada the later part of 70, 71. Let me get off the highway, and then we'll get to coming to Canada, okay?
Right.
Because there's two incidents here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not only the drugging, but it's the second time
mm-hmm.
I was screwed up.
Yep.
This happened in the Nixon administration. The second time I was screwed up was under Ronald Wilson Reagan,
mm-hmm.
okay? That okay.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. Okay, so anyway, I'm on the highway, and... You know, it's almost cliche, but I mean, sometimes life is almost like a cliche, you know. This hippie van stops, you know. I mean, the van is painted, and these hardcore hippies are in the van, right? You know, and they say, hey, get in, man, you know. And like, you know, and there's this very nice couple who's the most together of the grouping in this van. And they're in the front, and they start talking to me, and I'm just lying in the back, right? And... They were so wonderful. I wanna thank them again if they even hear this. The woman looked at me and then she looked at her boyfriend and she said, "This guy's in trouble, man. Let's take him home." And so they took me to their they had a house and they took me to the house and they gave me a bath and they gave me some fresh clothes to wear. And gave me something to eat, and I wasn't talking very much. And she said to me, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to New York City." She said, "We'll buy you a bus ticket, man. You're in no shape, okay?" And so they drove me to downtown Philadelphia, and we had a cup of coffee together. And then they bought me this bus ticket, and I went back to New York. Which was really quite nice.
Have you seen him since?
No. So, anyway, I mean, that was part of what, you know, as I say, there was actually a sense of community being established.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to New York, and then through 5 years of travail, what happened was there was one friend, he had been politically active with me, and then he had left the States, and he had gone to Montreal. And I don't know, I was trying everything. I mean, it was getting a little better, you know. Like at one point, I got better enough. Oh, God. I was living in a mission, and I got a job as a warehouseman. And that, so I got some money, right? And, you know, I mean, I was really quiet and into myself, you know, just, you know, like testing the waters of, you know. And so I went up to Montreal, And I mean, everybody who knew me, just it was sort of like, oh, yeah, alrighty. You know, they was sort of like, you know, I guess they assumed like I had a bad drug trip, you know, which I had, but I didn't give it to myself. This guy said, well, you know, you should leave the States, man. I mean, at that point, you know, peace, love was no more, and the cities were burning. And you know, the Watts was going on in Detroit and Harlem, and I mean, it was just, you know, I mean, like, you know, and you know, oh, you had the assassinations. I mean, it was just like, you know, whole bunches of stuff, and so, which I no longer was, you know, I mean, like, you know, I, you know, couldn't keep two things in my head together. So
this is still like just a couple of years after.
I was off the chessboard, you know, politically as an activist, unquote, you know. So he said, well, you should come up to Canada. I said, yeah, okay, you know. He said, it's sane up here, you know. So I said, okay. So I moved up to Montreal, and then Montreal was going through a great bit of upheaval about French and English, which I didn't know a hell of a lot when I first got, you know, across the border into Montreal, and it was sort of like, oh, what did you invite me up here? What, a political environment? What are you? And he said, no, look, go out to British Columbia, man. There's woods, there's trees, okay? The thing to keep in mind, okay, was later I got solidly back together, okay? Later I was working as a copywriter on a radio station. I had a rented farm situation, and you know, I was back on my feet. Okay, I had chickens, you know, and
out in BC,
right? Okay, I had put in a garden. I mean, it's a healthy environment. You chop wood, you go swimming, you go skinny dipping in the lake, and watch a falcon for a while. I mean, you know, it's a good way
to live.
Yeah. So anyway. You know, I was doing that, and so when I got myself back together again...
After spending, what,
five years of not being so, then I met a woman and fell in love with her, and she had been politically active. She was a student activist and had tanks in the streets and had been a medic during some of the riots in Madison, Wisconsin. She had bicycled across the country, and I met her, and anyway, so we got married, okay, and I was with my wife for 2 or 3 years, and I hadn't told anybody, okay. I had put it out of my mind, okay. I had gone back to being a writer, okay. I hadn't thought about it. I mean, it was just like, forget about it, okay? And it was a pleasure to forget about it, okay? And so one night, my wife was holding me, and I was shaking and crying and really going through the terror again. And I told her about what had happened. And she was really, really very strong. You know, she said, well, Ron, you're a writer, right? I said, yes. She said, write about it. I said, okay. So that was the first writing of what's come to be Transgressions. Mm-hmm. Okay. Up until, you know, I started writing about it. Okay, it was just cathartic, you know, and healthy. There was still the basic, you know, robotic instructions I had given myself at the roadside, which was, you know, don't tell anybody, they're just going to think you're nuts, you know, and get yourself together, okay? So, you know, I guess at the point where I felt strong enough that, yeah, you know, okay, you know, knock on wood, it's together, you know, like... Which leads me to all of the research that I've done about MKUltra itself. Right. Okay.
So let's talk about that. After deciding that you were going to write about it, what avenues of did you pursue trying to find out what happened to you?
Okay. I've read all of the Senate hearings works. I've also read, I believe, every book that's been written, and there's been some fine work by different writers on MKUltra, okay? And given myself all of that background, I also, since I'm a fiction writer, that's what I am. I mean, like, you know, I've had to become a switch hitter in the sense of having worked for ad agencies and newspapers and trade journals, and, you know, I even have my own consulting business as a writer Perfect Communications is the name of my consulting business. But, you know, I know how to do other types of writing, okay? But I am a fiction writer, okay? So I thought that the best medium to doing this was to write it as a work of fiction. And the thing was, I didn't think that just a first-person story would really give a full picture of what was going on there. So what I've also done is research Sidney Gottlieb. He had a very nice farm. He used to like to milk goats. And he was, by the way, Sidney Gottlieb, it was a very interesting synchronicity, who was in charge of the CIA's, mind control experiment, you know, where a Jew who's from the Bronx, just like me, a Jew from the Bronx, right? I mean, perfect, right? Him and I, would have had a fist fight, I believe, after school if I had ever met this son of a bitch. I shouldn't get back to my Bronx shtick. The thing was, like, I've also researched all of the people involved so that, some of the characters in my book, since we'll get into the second half of it, is like, you know, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Oliver North, Tom Charles Houston, Tom Charles Houston is a fascinating little doohickey, because he was Nixon's young guy, okay, who also came from Indianapolis, right? And the thing is that, I've done research on the individuals involved, okay? And so I wrote a work of fiction, okay, which very interestingly, because I really do have a rather large talent, and I say that without an ego. I mean, it's a gift, and I've been blessed with it, okay? Interestingly, this book has had such difficulty in getting published, you see. Because it's the interlock, you know, it's the corporate interlock. I mean, it's just, you know, it goes on forever. The story that I wrote is fiction, but it's based on the factual data.
So during this time that you were trying to get information about MKUltra and specifically what happened to you, what program that you were involved in, what kind of response were you getting from the government? You were making Freedom of Information requests. How much information were they giving you? Okay. How much was blacked out?
Okay. The interesting thing is I've gone through different administrations, okay? I mean, gone through the Carter administration, okay? Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, and now Clinton, okay? So that'd almost be like, four or five different answers to that, okay? The Carter administration, because basically nothing happened until Carter came in. Okay, now I don't know if everything that happened during the Carter administration was what using those fellows' terminologies was a limited hangout, but which means, you know, tell them a bunch of phony baloney stuff that'll keep them occupied, and we'll keep the good stuff to ourselves, you know. But you know, I mean, Colby, the guy who just died. I try to stick to the facts. If I don't know it for sure, I'm not going to throw around accusations. He was the head of the CIA at that point. Let's just make something clear, okay, about that, because that's really the egregious lack of, because my main thrust in all of this, okay, is to achieve two things: truth and justice. Okay, believe me, I have gone through a desire for revenge. Okay, that was hell on earth. Okay, and I believe that, thank God, I have worked out my desire for revenge. Okay, but I don't think it's possible to put this to rest for myself without truth or justice being established. Okay, so during Carter's time and the hearings that went on, I mean, Carter came on and he said, "I'm not going to tell you any lies." You know, you had, you know, and I mean, that's what he claimed. Okay, so while he had the largest defense budget, even bigger than Reagan's increase, as far as I understand, but nonetheless, nice cop, bad cop. You know, anyway, Jimmy's a nice guy. He builds houses for poor people.
Still want to try that.
Right. Okay. So, during that period, there was information being released. Now, I sent off a lot of Freedom of Information requests. There's basic strategy that I work having now. I mean, I write a great Freedom of Information request letter, but I've done it often enough. But first of all, you get denied, okay? Then you go through that whole thing. I mean, the basic thing, the game they sort of operate on is like, you want something, tell me where it is and I'll go look for it, you know? And so, you know, it's sort of like, you know, which in a way I shouldn't, I mean, if you're going to, because there's been some very helpful, good people in the libraries in the government as well, okay? I mean, there's all sorts of folk who work for government, and there's been people who've really tried to help me. The thing is, they're working with a big... I mean, there were lots of covert activities and lots of documentation. So even if you want to get stuff for somebody, to some degree, you got to know what are you talking about and what do you want me to look for, okay? So stuff that came out during that period was first... The most reassuring thing that came out during the Carter administration that without me going to the files and dragging all that stuff out, thank God, okay, I'm not nuts, okay?
And you're not alone.
I'm not alone. This really happened. That really, you know, I mean, like, you know, okay.
You've been listening to an interview with Ronald Howard Cohen about his abduction and severe drugging by the CIA and military as part of the mind control experimentation. Stay tuned next week for part two of this interview on CKLN, The International Connection 88.1.